You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
If it's not pandemic risk in this market, it's geopolitical risk, as we saw tensions between the US and China ratchet up again over Hong Kong today as the Chinese National Planning Commission meeting passes new laws over the territory, and it's also dropping its official GDP target as a country. This is China for the first time in decades. What does that tell you about the COVID-19-induced economic crisis that we're in? Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Asset Managers, and Raymond Parsons, a professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, as always, with you to end your week and to give us the wrap. Warwick, what do you think is the high point in the market today, or the big talking point?
Well, good evening, Michael. I think, to me, probably the one of the most notable things is just what a disconnect there seems to be between the real economy and stock markets. And actually, when you look at what stock markets are and what do they consist of, perhaps that shouldn't be as big a surprise. So, for example, if we look at the JSE, I mean, the enormous contribution, for example, from Naspers, which is very much a business that is a tech stock. It lives online substantially. Of course, it's international as well. But, I mean, for example, if we looked at the S&P 500, I mean, a massive amount of that is made up of tech stocks, healthcare, and consumer staples. And they really are very, very divergent from the regular humdrum of the U.S. economy. And so there's this huge divergence here that is really, it really is particularly stark in this environment where you see forecasts of negative GDP, perhaps nudging double-digit numbers, and a stock market that has behaved as if it was just a little slowdown.
There's a huge disconnect. In fact, Jeremy Sampson on the show last night called the word for this year decoupling, because we've seen a massive decoupling from reality, it seems, in the markets, as you've just underlined it. Raymond, the Saab came in with a 50 basis point cut as anticipated yesterday, but there was a split on the quantum, which leads one to believe that we won't see too many more cuts this year. What were your general thoughts following that meeting?
Yes, good evening, Michael. Look, I think it was the right decision in the circumstances. I think one could argue whether it should have been perhaps 100 basis points, but I'm quite comfortable with what was decided, because it means that since the beginning of the year, that our Reserve Bank has cut our borrowing costs for households and indeed for the business community by at least one third. I think we mustn't underestimate the background noise of the 3-2 vote, because I think that does indicate that we're not going to see necessarily the same bold approach in the future. There are still some hawks sitting on their perch. So I think the important point here is to say, well done so far. We'll have to see what further happens in the economy. I think the important point here is really twofold. The one is, I still see some resonance in the statement that the important thing to worry about is the inflation target. But I think there is a balance of inflation and deflation in our economy. I'm tending to take the view that it's the deflationary factors that will get the upper hand, and our monetary policy will have to be geared accordingly. The second point is, of course, that even if we look at how effective monetary policy can be, given what we've done so far, as far as borrowing costs are concerned, that it does go in tandem with the extent to which the real economy can respond to this. And it's no good, in fact, saying, well, your borrowing costs are cut if you can't go out to spend. So I think there is that important factor that determines the extent to which what the central bank does can indeed make a difference. The second is that the economic support measures must be effectively implemented so that people feel confident enough to make use of these reduced borrowing costs. But finally, I think the important point where I probably disagree with the bank, and perhaps they have to be a little bit optimistic, that you will have noted that their forecast for our growth this year, they've increased it from minus 6.1 to about 7%. Well, I think that might be a bit optimistic. I think that my view is they're probably going to be closer to 10%, and some people think even more. So I think what's important is, although there are other things, and no doubt we're going to talk about the lockdown itself and the pace at which it's being removed, but I think the important point is that our Reserve Bank will have to remain responsive to whatever the future developments are likely to be.
And it's an important point you raise that dovetails neatly with what Warwick is concerned about with this disconnect that we're seeing in markets, because, Warwick, I do think markets are not fully appreciating the extent of the economic cul-de-sac that we've parked or reversed our car into and how we can get it out again. And if you just have a look at whether or not economic or monetary policy or stimulus through dropping interest rates is going to be enough to help lift the economy, we look at Sweden. Now, Sweden was held up as this poster child. It didn't lock down its economy. But Sweden is still in deep economic crisis. And I think what it shows you is that with reopening an economy, it's not going to be just a magic bullet to say, well, even if we went to level one tomorrow, I think consumer behavior matters far more. And what we're seeing in Sweden is that consumer confidence is in tatters.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you are likely to see some kind of convergence between stock markets and economies. And, of course, the problem for Sweden, although they have in the short term done significantly better than the EU, for example, they're still in the position that because they trade with the rest of the world, and particularly the EU, they are still likely to suffer quite a severe slowdown anyway. So in that sense, I mean, even the innocent are going to be, shall we say, jailed along with everyone else.
You know, if we look at the way we're handling the whole question of these lockdowns, it's, do you in fact offer this phrase, we are starving the beast, but we are feeding the recession. I mean, that's really what we're doing. And yes, we've now reached the point, it's clear, everyone's agreed, even on the medical side, that you can't have a permanent lockdown. So it's a question of how you then have to phase it out. And I'm saying every day I've used this idea, and I want to push it now, because if we don't push it, we're not going to get balanced outcomes or good decisions, and we keep lapsing into confusion and a lot of chaos about what the rules should be and how rapidly we should do it. And that is, just as every day we get these public health reports, how many people are infected, died, and recovered, I'm saying there's an imbalance. We're getting ad hoc reports about what is the broad economic damage in jobs and so forth. I'd like to see a weekly report which comes out either from the National Treasury or from perhaps we could ask Stats South Africa, because they are both credible, to consolidate the bad economic news and to publish it once a week alongside the health figures, so that hopefully our decision makers will take better decisions about how to phase this whole lockdown out.
Because what worries me is the two are inextricably interlinked. It's not binary. It's not either the economy or we save lives. If the economy goes down, lives go down with it. I think many types of surgery are being delayed. TB testing rates are down. So clearly there's a massive concern to ensure that we're driven by the health and the economic science here, Warwick. What I'm picking up so far is that we're likely to see a differentiated approach to the lockdown. So we might see level three in the rest of the country and continue with level four in some of the areas where we've seen a more rapid spread, like Cape Town and potentially Gauteng as well, Joburg and Pretoria at least, and that would be economic suicide.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the other issue that concerns me, Michael, is that you know, when we think about our lockdown, it's been bought with a time in the peak infection rate has been bought at horrific economic cost. And it concerns me that there's this thought to reopen the schools and open up new vectors of
infection, when really it's the economy that needs to get back to work, whereas the contribution of schooling to the economy is in the near term, and the near term, I'm sorry to say, is what matters, because it's the near term that can bankrupt businesses or not. So reopening schools seems like a terrible idea to me at the moment.
The concern here is, firstly, if we can't even handle these national regulations effectively, how are we going to possibly cope if we have an asymmetrical approach with, you know, sort of different levels in different parts of the country? Secondly, that the metros generate 60% of our GDP, so we've got to understand what the price is if we go down that route. And thirdly, we know that our supply chains, we already found that out, are interdependent. So although you like to phase things out, the fact remains that eventually you're riding a bicycle. If you stop, you're going to fall off. So we have to continue with this process. If we do it and in a coordinated and in a rational way, so that we don't go from the frying pan into the fire.
That's a critical point that you make there. Raymond Parsons, professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Warwick Lucas, chief investment officer at Galileo Asset Managers. Have a fantastic weekend. Here's hoping that life is a little different and a little less differentiated via the levels and less restrictive next week. We're likely to see volume certainly in the market muted given the US and UK holidays on Monday.